Hey gang, we weren't originally planning on sharing this month's Patreon-exclusive interview on the regular feed, but we loved interviewing world-renowned cult expert, Dr. Yanya Lalich, so much, and we just thought that there was so much amazing information that we really wanted to share a little bit with you guys. So we hope that you enjoy this sneak peek.
That is so fucked up.
It's fucked up. Boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, so fucked up. Boom, 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 boom. It is just so damn fucked up. That's fucked up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is That's So Fucked Up, a podcast about cults, murder, and other generally fucked up stuff. We're your hosts. I'm Ashley Richards.
And I'm Cam Dexter.
And today we have with us Dr. Yanya Lalich, and she is laughing as we describe the show. It's a pretty interesting little description we've got, but I mean, that's kind of it, you know, and I'm personally like really obsessed with cults in particular. So I have so many questions, but just to let our listeners know a little bit, you guys will probably recognize her from The Vow, Heaven's Gate, Cult of Cults on HBO. She also has several books out, including Escaping Utopia, Growing Up in a Cult, Getting Out and Starting Over, which came out a few years ago. And we'd love to ask you a few questions about that later. But first off, I just kind of want to jump right in and thank you so much again for being here. And could you just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. I know it's been quite a battle to nail down a date, so we're finally all together. So my story starts with me having been in a cult myself back in the 70s and 80s, and it was very restrictive. It was a political cult. And when I got out, I was not quite 41 years old, and I felt like a 15-year-old. So I'd spent 10 years in this very closed environment. I think I had seen two movies. I was completely culturally deprived and emotionally deprived and every other, certainly sleep deprived. So anyway, I eventually got my brain back together by reading and going into therapy and things like that. And I eventually, after 10, it took about 10 years, I decided to go to graduate school and get my PhD. So I was 50 when I started grad school. And I
That's
like
amazing.
People, yeah, I like to tell people that because it's never too late. And after grad school, I got a job teaching sociology at one of the California State Universities and continued to do my research and work on cults. I wasn't quite as active when I was teaching because we had a big teaching load. But now I'm back to, you know, doing a lot of interviews, and I have a online Zoom support group for former cult members every other Saturday, and just generally doing a lot more with this subject that I'm so passionate about.
And I'm so glad that you are, because there needs to be people like you who are educating people about this, because it's such a nefarious and more common thing than people even know.
Right. And now it's even more common with QAnon and all of this stuff that's been happening lately in our country. So
we definitely want to get into that. But before we do, just in a general sense, or in your own words, is there a way to generally define a cult?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I see a cult is, it can be very tightly bound or it can be looser, as we're seeing now. There is always an authoritarian leader who is the one who sort of comes up with the idea, the belief system. And that belief system, which is the second criteria, is what I call a transcendent belief system, in that it gives you the answer to everything, to the past, the present, and the future. And part of the requirement of that belief system is that you have to go through a personal transformation in order to be accepted on the path to whatever salvation they're promising you, whether it's, you know, money, political revolution, religious salvation, whatever. So that's that personal transformation that's required. That's the indoctrination program, right? So those are the first two criteria. And then for me, what I look for are what I call the systems of control and influence. And that's how the structure is set up to recruit, indoctrinate, and retain the members and sort of transform them into perfectly loyal little cult members.
Okay.
So this might be a stupid question based on what you just said, But would you say that all cults are destructive?
Well, first of all, there are no stupid questions.
Thank you.
As a professor, I had to say that a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that, honestly.
Now, the way I see it, cults exist on a continuum. And so that they go from, you know, extremely harmful to way less harmful. And perhaps some people might say benign. In my opinion, a cult can never really be benign because part of the requirement is for the members to give up their autonomy, right? And so I don't think ever, if it's ever a good idea to give up your autonomy, even if it's a chocolate chip cookie cult, right? So, but
sign me up.
Right. But they do exist on a continuum. And also within each cult, different members will have different experiences. You know, it'll depend on the size of the cult, how long you were in, what level you were at, how old you were when you joined, or if you were born in it. And so, you know, you can have somebody come out of a group and say, oh, I don't, you know, it wasn't that bad. I don't know what so-and-so's griping about all the time, but so-and-so had a very different experience. And so we can't negate that just because one person had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
No, and what I was thinking about, I was like, I want to talk in a, you know, we want to talk in a generalized way to get these things defined, but it is hard almost to talk about it when you put it that way, because there are so many unique experiences. And I was going, oh my gosh, I'd never thought of, you know, you could be in one specific cult and have so many different experiences based on, yeah, anyway, I'm rambling, but.
Well, no, exactly. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people who are, you know, kind of what I call fellow travelers, you know, a number of cults, especially the bigger ones, they might have kind of an outer ring of people who just donate money. Mm-hmm. Right? Who buy the newspaper, who support them in some way. And they're not really members per se, but they're an important part of the whole structure and keeping it going. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I know, like, a lot of people ask me about transcendental meditation, right? And they say, well, you know, I don't mind. I do my 20 minutes twice a day of, you know, with my secret mantra, which of course is not a secret mantra. It's bogus. And I always say, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, first of all, you don't need to pay money to get a mantra. You don't need to pay money to meditate. You can buy a book for $3.95 that can tell you how to meditate. And by being part of that, you're lending legitimacy to an absolutely very corrupt organization. And so do you really want to do that?
Wow. I never even thought of it that way. And I know people are very into transcendental meditation in California.
Yes. Yeah, it's very popular in the media industry.
Absolutely. It's an expensive course, too. I know somebody who did the first like level or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it's thousands of dollars. And I never thought of it before.
Mm-hmm.
So should we talk about QAnon yet, Ash? What do you think?
Yeah, let's go there.
I've been dying to ask you because of your background with a political cult. And we are just seeing so much. I don't even know how to put it. What's going on with QAnon today?
Well, you know, it's more than just QAnon for one. And,
yeah, of course.
You know, obviously, I think since the inauguration, QAnon is kind of splintering and regrouping and trying, and people are disaffected and leaving or questioning. And, mm-hmm. and so there's kind of this upheaval going on because Biden actually got inaugurated, which isn't what they thought was going to happen.
Right.
So we have to monitor what's going on. There's clearly people moving in, taking over kind of leadership roles. There is, unfortunately, a lot of the white supremacist and neo-Nazi and racist groups are moving in and recruiting the sort of disenchanted QAnoners and saying, mm-hmm. well, you know, come with us. We'll really make things happen. That's a problem. And then there's some still hard, absolutely a lot of very hardcore believers who actually believe that Biden is really not the president, that the entire city of Washington, D.C. is under lockdown, and that's why all the National Guard are there, and Biden is actually in prison. And on March 4th, Trump will rise again and actually become the president again. And they picked March 4th because it's a date historically, I forget how long ago, I think it was in the 1800s sometime, maybe late, maybe sooner than that. The inauguration actually used to happen on March 4th. So they picked on that date as well as something historically happened in 1833. And so that's the next date they're looking for. And in fact, I've heard that Trump is expecting a lot of people to turn up in Washington again on March 4th. And then their backup plan is that if it doesn't happen on March 4th, it's going to happen on April 19th. 19th or 20th, 19th, I think, because that's Hitler's birthday. A lot of events have taken place on that date, like the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. Timothy McVeigh did that on April 19th. So there are QAnoners who are still strong believers. I think we should let the government worry about the violent ones, and we should think about the ones who we can help leave by, you know, somehow reconnecting with them and helping them out, giving them a path out.
And just quickly, you know, in all your experience, does QAnon to you feel different? Like this one, and, you know, we've just been doing our podcast for a little while. You've obviously been covering this, but it feels different to me. And I don't know why, but is there a reason? Because it's
being different from your run-of-the-mill cult, what I call
Yeah, it seems like right. Bigger. It seems bigger.
No, very different. I mean, first of all, what we were seeing, and I think we'll continue to see, is this kind of a cult on a national scale. And we've never seen that before in our country. Obviously, they've seen that in Germany. They've seen that in China under Chairman Mao, you know, in North Korea. So there's definitely this very solidly planted seeds for a national cult. And it's also different because of the internet. You know, someone was saying to me the other day, and I hadn't really thought about this, that Heaven's Gate, I think, was the very first kind of cult that made news on the internet. And that you know, built a website and tried to recruit that way, sent out messages that way, you know, and that was in the mid-90s, you know, so this was all new. And other cults, you know, have recruited through the internet over the years. We've seen a little bit of that. But this is the first time we have absolutely huge communities of people set up as part of this cult. And we haven't seen that before. I thought about this in terms of terrorism and ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And you'll probably find old interviews with me where I've said, yeah, they get recruited over the internet, but eventually they have to go somewhere and meet someone. And that's not true anymore. They now rely on the internet, their communities that they found on the internet for their peer support. Mm-hmm. And peer support is a very huge part of the cult environment. It's probably one of the most key factors.
Just people having like a sense of belonging, essentially.
Exactly. And getting support and reinforcement from each other and modeling for each other how to behave, what to do, how to talk. And because even in the run-of-the-mill cults, you know, that's one of the most important things, that's why they're groups, right? Because we're social animals and we respond to our peers more than anything else once we pass a certain age. So yeah, you may love the leader, but in many cults, you may never even see the leader, much less meet the leader, right? So it's really everybody else around you who's kind of keeping you going. And the leader can become kind of a myth even. I know from my experience, you know, I hated being in my cult. And I was desperate to leave, but I would think, you know, how can I leave? How can I leave my comrades? You know, what a rat I would be. You know, here are these people I recruited, I criticized, I punished, I did, you know. It's like, how can I then leave and leave them here? And so it was my loyalty to them way more than any loyalty I had to the leader at that point.
Oh, so guilt, essentially guilt. Keeping you there.
Yeah, guilt and love for your comrades and shame. Mm-hmm. And then fear. Fear is a big factor in why people don't leave.
That old fear. Controlling with fear never fails.
Certainly that's a lot of what QAnon's about, right?
They're kidnapping children.
Yeah, they preyed on, you know, this fear of sex trafficking and pedophilia. And certainly we have an issue with that in our country. But they created, you know, this completely nonsensical idea, starting with Pizzagate, which was pre-QAnon. But yeah, so they got people, very good people who are concerned about a really good issue, got swept into this completely ludicrous group that was just using that as a ploy to get people.
Yeah, so sad. So I've heard the saying, I think like cult plus time equals religion or something like that. So how would you say that cults are different from mainstream religion?
Oh, very different. So first of all, not all cults are religious, right? There's every imaginable type of cult, right? There's psychotherapy cults and karate cults. I just got asked to do a documentary about karate cults. You know, there's like every kind of cult. But for me, the difference between a cult and a religious cult, say, or any cult, and a healthy religion is that a healthy religion is going to have you worshiping a higher being, you know, whether that's Allah or God or Jesus or Jehovah or, you know, a tree, whatever it might be, but it's some kind of supreme being that you can't really see or touch. That's a healthy religion. A cult is going to have you worshiping the man or woman who's standing right in front of you leading the service, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very different. Secondly, a healthy religion may give you guidelines for living, right? So they may say, you know, be kind to your neighbor. If someone new moves into the neighborhood, take them a cake or a box of cookies, right? But they don't come and check up on you and see if you've actually done that, right?
Right.
Or the Catholic Church, which is one of the, we could say, stricter religions in many ways. So the Catholic Church may say, don't use birth control. But they're not coming into your bedroom at night to see if you're using birth control. Whereas a cult will do that, right? Mm-hmm. A cult has you watched all the time, people spying on each other, reporting on each other. So that's another difference. A healthy religion is not going to think that it's the only possible religion that exists. They're going to admit that there are other religions and other people belong to other religions. They may think theirs is the best, but they do acknowledge that there are other religions. Whereas a cult is the only way. There is no other way. Everything else is bogus and bullshit, right? So there are many ways that there's a difference between a cult and a mainstream religion. The final point that I think is really important, which has come up a lot in America lately, is we have in the last, I don't know, say decade or more, this absolute explosion of street corner churches, you know, some guy in his house starting a church, right? And they're non-denominational. And the pastor, preacher, whatever he calls himself, probably never had any theological training. Mm-hmm. Those non-denominational churches are not necessarily cults right now, but they're good breeding grounds for cults. Because when people have that kind of power, they can't handle it. And if they're non-denominational, what that means is there's no higher body. They don't belong to a larger denomination where someone could go and say, hey, our pastor is abusing us, or we're not sure what's happening with the money. And so there are checks and balances. Whereas in the non-denominational groups, there isn't that. And in the cults, there isn't that. There are no checks and balances. You can never hold the leader accountable. It's not democratic. So this growth of these fundamentalist, mostly Pentecostal corner churches that some of have grown very big can easily become very cultic.
And just really quick, like a sub question of that, what do you think of the term alternative religious movement?
Meh.
Just a nice way to say cult.
Well, no, this is rooted in a debate primarily within academia about use of the word cult. And so there are these scholars who have invented this term new religious movement or alternative religious movement. And they basically believe that no one should ever use the word cult and no one should ever use the word brainwashing, that by using the word cult, we're just calling something bad because we don't like it and it's discriminatory. The problem with that argument is, as I said earlier, first of all, not all cults are religious, so that doesn't even fit with that scheme. Mm-hmm. But secondly, if something's a cult, let's call it a cult. There's a long-standing history of that term, and it's sociological, it's anthropological, it's psychological. There's an understanding of that term, and by trying to, I mean, I know there are scholars who have actually run campaigns into the media to convince journalists not to use the word cult, not to use the word brainwashing. And basically what they're doing is they're defending the cults. Mm-hmm. They go to court to defend the cults and not have charges brought against them. They try to keep people like me from being an expert witness and keeping me out of the courts, which they have never been successful at. But it really is built all around this idea of defending the cults and just letting them do what they do. Some of them, I think, see that they're protecting freedom of religion or something. Some of them are just bought off and they're doing it because they're making a good living doing it. And they now have built their careers on that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah, there's a lot of history.
To go back quickly, you said that you're seeing a lot of different kind of roadside churches pop up, but you know, it's a good breed. Why do you think that is? Why right now are we seeing more than maybe we have been in the past?
I think not only are we seeing more of that, but we're seeing more cults than ever before. of all kinds.
Yep.
But I think it's because life has gotten so complex. We've gotten a little bit disjointed as a society, and people look for, and this is a very natural response, people look for a framework to help them understand the world, to make sense out of the world. Mm-hmm. And for some people, they turn to religion for that. And for other people, they may turn to a political movement or a conspiracy theory or, you know, some kind of self-improvement course, whatever it might be. But people are needing that kind of balance in their life. And so they, unfortunately, in many cases, latch on to these potentially destructive groups. But I think it does have to do with the complexity of our society, and especially recently, you know, the kind of turmoil we've seen, you know, just in America. I mean, you know, the last 4 years have been horrific. I don't know, you know, maybe all your listeners won't think that, but the last four years, I think
they're on board. They're on board.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've been upsetting for people on whatever side of the spectrum. Then all of a sudden along comes the pandemic, right? So people are like, what the hell is going on? And so that's a time when cults can recruit very successfully.
If you want to hear the full interview with Dr. Lalich, make sure to head over to our website, tsfuthepodcast.com. And that's where you can join our Patreon, or you can play bingo with us for a chance to win a free month of Patreon. Bye.
Bum, 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 bum. That's fucked up. I'm so fucked up.
Can't you see?
It's just really fucked. That's fucked up.